because, for instance, if you look at all the multi-core papers, you can see that they are finding bottlenecks in the OS itself, right? It's true. There are some bottlenecks. But they're taking a big assumption in this, that they're assuming that there is no bottleneck to access the disk, because they usually use like a RAM FS, right? They mount everything on a RAM file system, so there is no bottleneck to access the disk. So still, the disk is going to continue to be the bottleneck for a long, long time, right?
Again, for depending on the workload, right?
Yes,
depending on the IO-based workloads, may be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for IO-based...
But if a workload can fit in memory, then that's not the case.
Yes, but in I mean, I believe that in most cases, I mean, there are always going to be workloads that don't fit on memory, right? So you're going to always have access to disk or...
But I'm saying that the a statement which says that IO is always going to be the bottleneck for the next 10 years has to be qualified a little bit.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I mean, but yeah, for that specific set of workload, it's not only going to be the bottleneck, but it's going to be, I mean, there's going to be a huge gap between the IO performance and the CPU performance. I mean, it has always been increasing.
Sure.
And the trend is that it's not going to decrease, even with the addition of SSDs and all that.
With the addition of SSDs, certainly the gap has been somewhat bridged, I would say.
I mean, I think it has helped. The problem is that you cannot put everything on the SSD. And like we see, the SSD, the performance is for some, in some cases, it's not that great, right? And they're still very expensive, right? So.
Right.
I mean, there's still some substantial work to do in terms of really coming up with a convincing design for this hierarchical storage.
Mm-hmm.
How is it going to be?
Right.
So I think that this analysis of trade-offs between those two classes of systems, I think it would be a relevant work.
I think it would be very relevant. I completely agree. I think. And I also completely agree that, you know, it could be that for certain kinds of workloads, a caching solution is good enough.
Exactly.
And you don't need the complexity of a multi-tier system.
Mm-hmm.
But and for us to demonstrate that or invalidate that, we need to look at real-world traces and do an analysis of traces. An analysis of workloads to determine what kinds of workloads are suitable for what architecture, whether it be caching or multi-tier. I think that is certainly a gap right now. We are in a good position, actually, to do that work, because you've already done the multi-tier work. And the caching work, I would expect, would be simpler than what you've already done.
I would expect it. I mean, I think I could possibly modify the system that I already have and make it a caching system.
Right, the question is, do we want to talk about a multi-level cache storage using Flash, SAS, and SATA,
mm-hmm.
right, where blocks move up the chain and then back down, instead of arbitrarily moving. And that's a more cache-like solution, but if you allow arbitrary moves, then it becomes a multi-tier.
I mean, there are multi. Yeah. So what you're basically saying is an exclusive cache, right?
Yes. Exclusive and also multi-level, rather than just
exclusive multi-level. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, those are things more regarding to the design than.
Right.
I mean, but I mean, my idea was just to. Take that notion that I think a lot of people have that question in mind.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, which will give you...
Right.
In which cases, which one performs better?
True.
Right? And now I think we're going to have a good amount of traces, and,
mm-hmm.
and if we're able to gather a couple of months' worth of traces, mm-hmm. it would be great. Right?
Yeah, that reminds me. I just got an email today from one of the other... accepted papers at FAST this year
okay.
from Penn State,
And you're a shepherd.
I'm not a shepherd. I just got an email, thank you email, saying that they used our traces
for
doing their work, and the paper got accepted.
Great, that's very good.
So
which traces are the ones from?
I think they are the content traces.
Content traces.
Yeah, the content traces.
So we have more of those.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're going to have to make a PO box so they can chip up this, because it's just too much to transfer over the net, I think.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that this email, the other reason why they sent me the email is because they're saying, this is actually a classmate of mine from back in India, and he's now a professor at Penn State.
I think you've mentioned him.
Bhuvan, yeah. And he's the author of the DFTL paper. I don't know if you...
Yeah, I remember that paper.
Yeah, so he sent me an email saying that they could run our tracing module on CiteSeer. You know CiteSeer?
Yeah,
it's
because they have a node.
They host... No, they run the whole data center for CiteSeer. Everything of CiteSeer runs inside Penn.
So they could run our module there.
Yeah. So
that would be great.
Yeah.
I mean,
so...
Yeah,
so that's something we're going to try to explore further.
Yeah, that would be really good,
mm.
And possibly that would be very very good.
Mm.
And are they running Linux on those machines? Or
I don't know,
but
I'm
because right now we have Linux and Solaris modules.
Mm.
So
right, but that's with the traces, we are making an impact. People are doing more and more work evaluating their systems using traces, and having a repository of traces is a good way for us to publicize our work.
Exactly, yeah, because people will look at the traces and then will look at what we've done with them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're going to cite us somehow.
Yeah, they will. So coming back to this direction, I think it's a very worthwhile direction to pursue. One way to pursue it is to do exactly what we did for EDT,
mm-hmm.
is build the system with the optimizations and replay the traces and measure power and performance.
Okay.
One way, and do that for both systems now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do a contrast to just based on empirical observations.
Okay.
And the other way is to do a more formal analysis, to measure workload stability and the parameters of the stability of workloads that lend it to be more conducive for certain class of solutions, which gives a little bit that stronger solution. But that requires us first perhaps to do an additional piece of work before we do the empirical work.
Okay.
Which is the workload stability.
Exactly.
So which is what are you thinking about?
I'm thinking that there has to be some workload analysis that comes first, right? So we can characterize the workload. Stability is it's part of the analysis, I think, I would imagine.
Okay.
So more concretely, in terms of planning, what I was thinking I saw that hot storage is in January, right?
Yeah.
Sometime in January. So send some a workshop paper with the...
No, it's in March.
In March.
First March. Yeah. The deadline is first
USENIX
March.
USENIX is in January.
Yeah, USENIX is in
January. Okay.
But that's
we're not going to do anything. Okay. So send up a workload characterization analysis to...
Hot storage.
To hot storage. And possibly for next year's FAST, send a paper with this work. I mean, the comparison of the schemes.
Okay.
But the first thing, in my opinion, that we need is an idea of how workload behaves and what's different between them.
Right.
What makes and then the next step would be to determine which system benefits from different types of workload.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it would be sort of good to talk and think more about
about exactly that. I mean, even at a conceptual level, before we do any formal analysis, to what
we want to accomplish. That's what
not what we want to accomplish, but what we would expect. What kind of workloads will be more conducive to a caching solution versus a multi-tier storage solution? I don't have a clear sense for that either.
Yeah, I don't have it.
So, but that would be the, at least conceptually, we have to get an understanding for what we think would do better with one solution or the other, because that will then perhaps guide our workload modeling work and stability work.
Okay.
Because then we can, if we know certain properties of the workload at a conceptual level, then we know that, well, this is the direction we should go in terms of our analysis of workload stability or workload properties.
True. I mean, just in the top of my head, one case for that's bad for workloads. For tiering is when you have too much variation on the workload. But that's also bad for caching, right?
Yeah, it is bad for caching. So,
but I mean, yeah, I mean, I said that it's specifically bad for tiering because tiering, you look at the workload and then you make a decision after some time, or I mean, you're usually not dynamically tweaking the system. Whereas in a cache system, you are doing changes online all the time.
We could also, for instance, have a version of the multi-tier system where we do that. Right? I mean, right now all our reconfig is epoch based, where it could very well be continuous.
Yeah. I mean, the system that we have now can be adapted to all those things. We don't have to design a new code from scratch. We can simply use part of the code. And the code is, the good thing is that it's pretty stable. I mean, it enables you to run at least 24 hours that we test without any problems.
Right.
So that's good.
Yeah. So that's very good. So, okay. I think that sounds like a good idea, the good plan to shoot for some modeling work for hot storage. The motivation for the modeling would be based on hybrid storage systems.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly, hybrid storage systems.
And right. We could also write a hot storage paper with just conceptually comparing these two solution classes with combined with some modeling, right? Maybe a page and a half of modeling the workload and then build a story around these two different alternatives.
Okay.
But at a high level, that's another possibility.
Because
that might be more interesting than just a modeling paper for some readers.
True.
But I would certainly like to see that paper, which actually compares these two architectures, because
that's one of the questions that we have, right?
I think the industry in general has that question. NetApp has taken a very strong stance in that respect, and they just believe in the caching architecture and not the tiering one. Whereas there are other companies that we cite in our work, which are
IBM,
which are
both. But they actually haven't compared the two approaches, because I know that IBM, they have EC tier, which is obviously tiering, and then they have this thing, I think it's called Sleep, that uses cache. That's another project that Wendy's leading. But they don't do a comparison between them. I mean, it's just like each group is working on a project by its own, and that's it.
But the easy tier, from what I understand, is more sort of it deals with more static patterns of the workload than with the dynamics, right?
So the way easy tier works is that it does three configurations every day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So starting from that point, also
it's a multi-tier.
It's a multi-tier. Well, right now it only, my understanding is that it supports two tiers, Flash and SAS.
Okay.
Or Flash and SATA. I don't remember what it. I mean, just 2 tiers. And there,
but for online workloads, is it?
It's online, yeah. It does online reconfiguration.
It's not that the flash is the primary store and.
No.
Okay.
No. So it basically gathers statistics every. It gathers, I think, 5 minutes base statistics and then summarizes them further, and at the end of the day, it takes a decision and migrates. I think it's limited to 5 gigabytes per day.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't migrate more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically it. So mm-hmm. if you have a peak in the middle of the day, then you will not possibly not see it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It looks for longer
mm-hmm.
trends
okay.
in the workloads.
Mm-hmm. It would be certainly interesting to compare against something like that too, especially if we have long-term traces
mm-hmm.
and see what is the impact of and for what kind of workloads slow response is good enough.
Okay, yeah. I think we possibly need more variety in the type of traces, right? Because, for instance, currently all that we have is just application traces.
Hmm.
And user activity. We don't have any, let's say, database or
yeah.
Anything. But if we have Sightseer, I mean, I'm sure they're using a database.
Probably, yeah.
I'm almost 100% sure that they're not even using regular text files. They're querying some database or something like that.
Yeah, probably. Well, it's a search engine, so Google doesn't use a database, but I think they do have their own version
of
the database.
They have online indexes. Right? So, I mean, online or in-memory indexes for most of the things. So.
Right, so the querying is not mm-hmm. going to induce too much IO load.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it would be certainly good if we can get traces from Sightseer.
Yeah.
And at least Bhuvan seems to think that it's possible. So.
Okay, that would be very good.
Mm-hmm. And we now have an updated version of the module that allows us to collect the Linux module, right? As well as the Solaris.
Yeah.
So we could share that with them.
Yes, I mean, they're both very simple.
Mm.
I mean, there's not much to them. Especially Solaris, it's just like 2 lines, 2 prenets.
Mm.
That's it. Yes. I think Eric has not had any problem running it. That's what I mean. It's been running on the Buffalo for a week.
Mm.
Without any issues, and we started collecting yesterday on Bear, and it's going strong.
Mm. That's good, yeah. He was surprised that Buffalo wasn't producing much.
Because
he thought that the students were using the system a lot.
It's not producing much.
Mm.
I mean, actually, any of the machines in the lab produces more traces than Buffalo,
Mm-hmm.
No, not any, but I mean, most of the machines in the lab.
The traces in the lab are also for Linux, where we have four entries instead of two.
You have one entry per CPU.
We have one entry per CPU.
But you don't have any more IOs per.
No. Oh, yeah. So the difference is that our lab traces have content hashes in them.
Have content hashes. Yeah, but you could also say that they're. Those traces are multi disk because those are 40 something disk systems.
Uh-huh.
So when they have to do a backup,
mm.
it's a lot of different disks that you have to read.
Okay. No, I'm saying the size of the traces. What impacts the size of the traces? The size of each record in the trace.
I mean, yeah, it does have substantial impact. That's true. Because we have, I think we calculate content hash for every block.
Hmm. Every 512
yeah.
bytes, which...
And from what I've seen, in those Solaris systems, most of the IOs are 128 blocks, which is what? About 64K.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wonder why.
Well, most of the reads, the writes are... Yeah, the writes are different because they always are measured by other processes.
Mm-hmm.
But most of there are usually the things that in Buffalo there are usually like two processes doing all the IO,
mm-hmm.
the SMBD, which is the Windows file
mm-hmm.
server
mm-hmm.
daemon, and then scheduler,
interrupt handler,
the interrupt handler, exactly.
which responds to the completions.
Yeah, and then there's the F flush, which is the just like the PD flush, and that's it. In Bear, what we've seen one more process, which is the NFS. Because I assume that most people, well, not most, but a lot of people access it through NFS module volumes also.
Mm.
Yeah, but it has substantial more activity.
It's interesting. You can see how many Windows clients versus Unix clients just based on the traces.
Yeah, but just yesterday, from 3 p.m. to midnight, it generated close to 7 gigs of traces, uncompressed. Yeah, and today morning when I saw it, it had generated 9 gigabytes.
Wow, that's a lot. That's
like at 9 a.m.
That's just one record per I.O.
And that's one record per I.O. Two records per I.O. because we have issue and completion.
If you want to convert that into actual I.O. throughput or I.O. volume to the storage, it would probably be much more, right? I mean, what is the magnification or factor there?
Well, yesterday, at about 10 p.m., I ran a script and it had 50 million IOs.
50 million IOs?
Yes.
And each IO is about 64K?
Yeah, most of the IOs are 64K. I don't know the exact distribution, but from what I saw just looking at it.
To be conservative, let's say 32K times 50 million. 50 million records or 50 million IOs?
50 million IOs.
Okay.
That doesn't sound right. Well, yeah, you have 40-something disks.
40 disks, and how much time?
8 hours.
8 hours. Oh. 50 million times 32K. That's 150 gigabytes.
Yeah, 150 gigabytes.
150 gigabytes, is that right?
Yeah, about right. 150 gigabytes, more or less.
In 8 hours?
Mm-hmm.
How many? That
sounds reasonable.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
And that's reads and writes.
Mm-hmm. 150 gigabytes in 8 hours. If it's 64, then it's 300 gigabytes in 8 hours. Per hour, we have, let's say 150 gigabytes in 8 hours, per hour we have 20 gigabytes per hour.
Yeah, 20 gigabytes per hour.
And that's how much per second?
Per minute.
Per second.
Well, if you have 20 per hour, you have what, 0.3 per
5 megabytes per second.
5 megabytes per second.
That's quite a bit.
It's quite a bit, yeah.
5 megabytes per second.
I mean, continuously.
Over 40 disks.
Yeah.
Which is not too bad.
Yeah.
But that's some pretty serious activity.
Yeah.
One of the things that Bhuvan mentioned in his email.
Let me show you his email. Right, so he said that there are some concerns the reviewers raised about the traces, and he's willing to share the reviews. That's nice.
Very open.
Yeah.
But probably because you know him personally, right?
Yeah. So he does ask Sightseer team, and they're willing to let us gather data that actually is. So, yeah, the reviewers had some question about the traces, which could be with respect to the volume, because that also came up in the fast reviews.
The ones that made the...
Yeah, the original paper.
Okay.
The reviews came back saying that, well, the activity is too low to be realistic.
Well, yeah.
But this, with this stuff, I don't think people can say that anymore.
That's true.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously going to be some machines that are different.
Right, good. So they already have a state of Florida vendor. That's excellent. Right, that's excellent. That's Silicon Mechanics.
Oh, okay.
So we are good with that.
Mm.
That actually solves a lot of problems. You, apparently, right. UF and UCF, they're both buying all of it.
Yeah, so... That's good. That makes it a lot faster, right? The process of acquisition.
Yeah, but this is I mean, I'll ask Bowen for the comments about the traces to see what the concerns were, and we should get going with the Sightseer team too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could. Put us in contact with us. Put them in contact with us, and we can forward them the code.
Right. The code. Wow, there are some other issues with making code public now.
Well, it's not public. It's just...
Maybe we could send them the binaries. That might be okay.
The things that they have to compile it for each... for each kernel version, right?
Or we have to compile it for.
Or
them.
I mean, yeah, we have to compile it for them, and I'm not sure that any administrator will arbitrarily insert some piece of code in their system without knowing exactly what they're running.
Windows admins do that all the time.
Yeah, but I mean, if they have a decent administrator. I don't think we will do it. For instance, I don't know. You go to Eric and tell him, hey, put this in. I don't think
well,
he will
do
it.
Well, if you show them that it's been tested on similar OS configuration, they might be
willing to. So what's the problem with sharing the code?
I don't really know, but I've been told to be careful about that. I need to talk to some people in the intellectual property office here.
Okay.
We can always...
But, I mean, we can just make it public, that code. Make it.
You know, that's what I'm saying. We cannot easily do that either.
Oh, we cannot?
No. Well, at least people are telling me to be careful about it now. Earlier, no one said anything, but now people are saying that we have to watch out for...
We have some code public already.
We already have that, yeah. We already have some of the...
Access is public.
Yeah, some of the code is already public.
Hmm.
Yeah, but that's what I've been told. I need to find out more about that before we can comfortably share code.
Okay.
I can always tell them that I didn't know that I was not supposed to share this code. I thought it was, I mean, as long as they didn't use it for commercial purposes, I thought it was okay. But in reality, I don't know the answer to my own question.
Okay, so we should probably find that out.
I'll find that out. And just to make sure that we're not making a mess later on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so that was my idea of.
I think that makes a lot of sense, and I mean that's. Now that you say it, it's almost obvious that we should go in that direction. Especially because we have the necessary background and expertise to go in that direction.
Yes.
We should build on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not starting something else from zero.
Yeah. That sounds like a good idea. So we should... I know that we've also been meeting for Soft PM, but I mean, my hope is that slowly Daniel and Carlos, they can take over from you.
Okay.
I mean, you'll have to stay with them for a while.
Yeah. Right. I mean, right now what I'm doing is just helping them in the code, whatever they need. I mean, sometimes they find a piece that they don't understand, and I go and sit with them. And for instance, the first time we had to do some modifications to Sid, I did it with them. We did it in my computer. Okay, so come here, and I we did it entirely in my computer, and I tell them, okay, now go and test it in your computer. Then they came back with some bugs and all that, so we fixed them together. And but I think, at least in the SID layer, they're mostly independent now.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, but well, that's good, and the thing is that that's also the simplest. The simplest step. The other,
well,
the other part is.
I think that most of the really complex issues you've already resolved. In the Lima layer.
Yes, that's
true. Or maybe, well, I should take that back. If we find something wrong there, that's probably really, really complex at this point, right? To debug, because I think we've sort of plucked all the low and medium hanging fruit, and with respect to debugging Lima.
True.
And you said that you've also found some additional bugs when you were trying to make SQL lightweight.
Yeah, by the way, I had a dream last night that it worked.
Oh, yeah. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes in the dream you can get visions as to what might be going wrong, and that's always helpful.
Yeah, I had that vision too, but it didn't help much. Yeah, it had something to do with the static flag and all that, but I don't think that's... anyway, that is a fun call. So your idea is that for them to eventually take over.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is going to go beyond your PhD.
Yeah.
It is important for others to step in now than at the last moment when you're wrapping up your thesis.
That's true. Yeah. Now that I have some time also, right?
Yeah. To help them. But the other thing, I think I should stop this.